A councilman from Dearborn, Michigan is outraged over a 911 call. He wants to know why no charges have been filed against a police officer who admits to confiscating marijuana from suspects and then baking it in brownies. And once he and his wife were full and high, they thought they'd overdosed and called 911.
I think I'm having an overdose, as so is my wife.
Overdose of what?
Marijuana. I don't know if they had something in it. Can you please send rescue?
Did you guys have fever or anything?
No, I think we're dying.
Okay, how much did you guys have?
I don't know. We made brownies, and I think we're dead. Time is going by really, 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 really slow.
Well, instead of being charged... Prilla.
Sorry.
Instead of being charged, the police department let the officer resign. His wife was not charged either. So far, police officials have not commented on the case.
Yeah. What's happening, everybody? Welcome back. My name is Phil, and this is My Life as a Foodie. Thanks for joining me again. We'd have quite an episode this time around. Want to put a quick shout out to a big fan of the show, Jason, who emailed me to tell me that he's listening. Sounds like a really good dude, and I'm going to try to meet up with him sometime this summer for a beer at Hollingshead Deli in Orange. Once things settle down for me. So hello to Jason, and thanks again for your emails. Big things happening in this episode. First off, I want to share something that I find kind of awesome. I mean, it's awesome to me, all right? And I talked a little bit about this on the confrontation board with all the other podcasters, but I wanted to share it all with you. My friend Paul, who listens to the show, is a pilot for Northwest Airlines, and he flies the Asian circuit once a month or so. And I'm not sure exactly how long he does this, to be honest, but he has to fly out of his house to the hub in Minnesota, then flies to Asia, where he flies in and out of countries there, Korea, China, and Japan. So sometimes he'll be there and he'll try to download an episode of my show so he can listen on his iPod, which I think is kind of incredibly cool because, number one, he listens. But he actually goes through the trouble of downloading it from there so he can listen to it. And Paul is the one who, when I did the Korean show on Korean barbecue, went to Korea and he told the stewardesses that he wanted to have bulgogi. And he told them about hearing about it on my podcast. Bulgogi is the Korean barbecue. And they just went nuts. They started sharing their family recipes with him, telling him where to get the best marinades and stuff. And it was a really, really good story. And it stuck with me. Anyway, so he's in China recently, right? And he's trying to download my show, but the access is denied. Now, the site, it appears, has been banned. He Googles My Life as a Foodie, and it comes up, and a bunch of other sites that link to my show come up, and he can click on all those, but not my show's website. That's restricted. It's banned in China. So immediately, right, I'm jumping to conclusions. I'm thinking, this has to do with the crap that I said about China and the food supply to their Olympic athletes a handful of shows ago. You remember I did that story about the Chinese farmers going to organic farms and going through great lengths to show that their food's safe, you know, because there has been so many rumors and stories about lead poisoning and all sorts of other things that's become unhealthy to eat food in China. So they're trying to do damage control. Of course, I play this story and I said, you know, don't blame us for not trusting you, but sorry, you know, these are athletes. And, They can't take a risk of having lead poisoning in their food. Anyway, I didn't even think it was that big of a deal, but, and I don't even know if this is true, that this is the reason why it happened, but it carries an explicit tag. The show carries an explicit tag, and maybe, you know, they found out it carried an explicit tag. They said, well, we can't have that. Word had to get out. The government says, oh, that guy, after him, shut his side down. He hate the Chinese. Me no reiki. His show is a seal. Me no reiki.
Me no reiki.
Excuse me?
Me no reiki.
Right? I mean, it had to be a national story. It put the whole food industry in China in an uproar. If any of you have a more logical conclusion about why my site might be banned in China, you let me know, will you? Because until I hear otherwise, I'm going with this. And can you tell I'm flipping out? I think it's so flipping cool. Seriously, I do. I love it. You can't tell me that it's not cool to actually be banned in an entire country. And who knows? You know, maybe it is for language. You know, my show is a bit salty. It's turned a few people off in its short lifespan. You know, maybe the F-bombs and the constant dick jokes finally got to them. Who knows? But in any case, thanks again to Paul, not only for the awesome story. Oh, by the way, he does say that we're still good in Korea and Japan. So we've got that going for us. But not only thanks for the story, but thanks for listening, man. Seriously, I find it incredibly cool to have a connection like him. And to come back with a story like that was just phenomenal. And in other news, my wife and I are buying a home. So we're going to be moving in the middle of this month. And the move itself will not affect the show in any negative way. But it's going to delay another show for close to a month. So I just wanted to let you guys know this is the last one for probably about a month. So I'm just hoping you can all bear with me on this. I know I've got a month before without the show. But it was kind of early on when I had like three people listening, including me. So don't quit on me, all right? I'm not quitting on you. I just need some time to move, take care of my personal stuff, as well as to, you know, kind of continue to do my full-time job, which is really important right now. But outside of the delay, the move itself will not really affect the show in a negative way. Like I said, it's only going to improve it because I'm moving to a town called Irvine, and we lived there before. It's closer to food heaven than I am now. I mean, where I am now, I kind of have to search, hunt, and peck for places to get new food experiences. But where I'm moving has much more of a heavy Asian influence and more European influences. There are tons of more food experiences for me to have in South Orange County than there are where I'm living now. My favorite restaurants are all down there. I'm closer to markets with better selections, more Asian markets and hole-in-the-wall places to eat. There's better beer selection, believe it or not, closer to a homebrew store, I know that, and it's just a much better environment for us overall, and I'm dedicated to making the show better and bringing more food to the table, so to speak, and branching out to bring the highest quality show that I can. So I want to thank you for your patience in advance. It's a really exciting time for us, and the changes like this, as scary as they may be for the interim, they're definitely big, 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 bold, broad, positive moves in the long run. So I just wanted to mention that. Today is definitely going to be a completely different show than we've done before. We're doing a show on chocolate. Now, chocolate is one of those things I generally do not have a big passion for. Because I'm a dude, and dudes generally don't get turned on by chocolate like women do. But this one's for the guys and the girls, but mostly for the guys. Because I'm telling you, there's something in it for you, and there's something in it for her, then there's something in it for you again if you follow my drift. You follow me? All right? As if you don't, you're going to in a moment. We're going to start with Stone's 12th Anniversary Bitter Chocolate Oatmeal Stout. This one is for you. All right, this beer, along with Stone's annual anniversary celebration, is a bit early this year. Many reasons for it, but to get it ahead of time is always a good thing, I think. They just released the beer in early July. It's fantastic. It's a really great beer. It's an oatmeal stout made with Kuokau chocolate, which is a bittersweet chocolate that's produced down here in South County, in San Diego County. It's a high-end chocolate, and it's in a high-end beer. So those two things together, you know, you can't really go wrong. The flavor of the beer is rich with roasty flavors, like really good oatmeal stout should be, but with the added bonus of a bitter chocolate that lays along the side of your tongue, you know. You'd normally get bitterness. When you're drinking beer and you get bitterness, it usually happens at the back of your tongue or the middle toward the back. This actually attacks the sides of your tongue. And it's key to, in order to get all these flavors, to get the beer a little bit warmer than you would normally drink it. So not to say you should have it like, you know, room temperature warm, but warmer than like just pulling it out of your beer fridge. Usually around 50 degrees is where I like to drink this beer. Colder than that, you're going to dumb down the flavors of the beer. Mitch Steele is the head brewer of Stone, and he wrote this about the beer. He said, "Our anniversary ale this year stems from two pilot beers that were brewed by members of Team Stone. The first was Jeremy Moyner's incredibly delicious oatmeal stout, and the second one was Jake Radsky's amazingly homebrewed imperial stout that had an authentic Oaxacan chocolate added to the boil." Oaxacan chocolate, hopefully I'm saying that right, is Mexican chocolate. We love both beers so much that we decided to combine the recipes to make this year's anniversary offering, Stone 12th Anniversary Bitter Chocolate Oatmeal Stout. The beer pours deep black with a rich brown head of foam. The aroma is dominated by roast malt and cocoa. And upon tasting the cocoa, and he says they use the unsweetened, unprocessed cacao chocolate through our friends of Chuao Chocolatier, which, again, is the place down in South County in San Diego County. Really comes through, the chocolate does, with deep chocolate flavor and a long-lasting bitter finish. The roasted grains that they used add coffee and licorice accents, and it's not a thick beer. It actually is a bit of a thick beer, but it's not sweet, so it's not that cloyingly sweet thing that you would normally taste. And it's got that, you know, nice punch. That oatmeal gives it a nice full richness. And, of course, the oatmeal is done in the mash, so it's mashed with all the other grains. Provides a rich, silky mouthfeel, adds to the creamy texture of the beer. I have some right here. I'm going to open it, and we're going to have it together. Hopefully you guys have already tasted it on your side of the neck of the woods, or if you're anywhere around California, you've gotten it already. It's a great beer. What's the alcohol content? 9.2. Ouch! Yeah, it'll get you right in a boo-boo. Yeah, pours nice. This is something you definitely want to share, so I'm corking this sucker. Have the rest later with the wife. Smells like a stone beer. Isn't it funny how stone beers do that? It's amazing. You smell beer. I smell certain beers, and I go, oh, stone. It's got, I don't know what it is. It's hops? Who knows? Mmm. Man, that is rich. And there it is. That bitterness. Right there, laying on the sides. I can say unequivocally that, oh, look at that. I used a $10 word. I can say unequivocally that all of their anniversary beers, of all of them, this is nearing the top of my favorites. And I've told you guys before, that 10th anniversary ale that they did for the 10th anniversary when we had the Beer Report guys, Groucho and Chud, and we also had dude Rick from Big Foamy Head down here, that IPA was just phenomenal. I still have a bottle of it in my collection. And the IRS that they did earlier this year that I had on the show, I've told you how much I love that, right? Man, this thing, good night. This is good. Mm. And luckily for us, it's perfect with the dessert that we're going to have, that we're going to make on the show today. For a first on my life as a foodie, we're going to make dessert, complete grill food, all right? You've had your beer. Hopefully you'll save a little bit, because it's going to pair really, really well with what we're making. This segment of the show is definitely for her, but it's for you too, all right? And I know what you're thinking too. Well, you stop it. This thing is destined to get you all laid, all right? You make this right, and your wife or your girlfriend, she's going to tear your clothes off. Maybe right there at the table. You know, you make it halfway right, screw it up a little bit, you're still going to see hearts flying around her head. But either way, you're going to be in, all right? I know you guys are thinking this is a little strange. We're going to do dessert. I told you, no, I don't do desserts, but we're going to do one now, all right? So let's hit it. Oh, yeah. I know a lot of you tell me, listen, I love your show, but I just don't cook. And I know you don't like to cook, and you shouldn't feel obligated to cook. But you like to do other stuff, don't you? You follow me? All right, good. So shut the hell up. Put your apron on. Let's make this for the women. All right, it's good stuff. Chocolate souffle, it'll knock her socks off. I'm sure she's had it before. I'm sure she can make it herself. But if you make it for her, holy crap, dude. Check out the recipe. It's on the website, okay? Download it, print it out, follow it carefully. I'm going to tell you exactly how to make this dish. Please do not screw around with the recipe. I know I like to say sometimes, oh, pinch of this, pinch of that. That is how I cook. But we're baking, and this is the reason why I don't bake a lot. You have to follow the recipe as it's written, or you're really going to be sorry. So let's make these chocolate souffles. Here is what you need. 10 ounces of bittersweet or semi-sweet chocolate, finely chopped. Don't get unsweetened. It's like, you know, the Toll House chips, the chocolate chips. Get those. 10 ounces. 3/4 of a cup of heavy whipping cream. 5 tablespoons of sugar. 2 tablespoons or 1/4 stick of unsalted butter. 1 tablespoon of dark rum. 1 tablespoon of vanilla extract. 1/4 teaspoon of salt, 6 large eggs, separated. Yolks in one bowl, whites in another. If you don't know how to separate an egg, look it up on the internet or go to Food Network and learn how to separate an egg. It's very easy to do, but you have to separate them. The yolks have to be in one place, and the whites have to be in another. pinch of cream of tartar, and some powdered sugar. First thing you want to do, in a heavy medium saucepan, combine the first 7 ingredients. That's the chocolate, the whipping cream, the sugar, the unsalted butter, the rum, the vanilla, and the salt. Okay? Put them all together on very low heat until the chocolate melts, mixture is smooth. You want to watch this. You cannot step away from this pan when the heat is on it, or you're going to scald the chocolate. Keep it on low heat. Stir it often until it's completely melted. Once it's melted, remove it from the heat. Put a top on it. Preheat your oven to 350 degrees. Put on some Barry White or some Marvin Gaye. All right. Butter 8 3/4 cup ramekins or custard cups. Coat the insides with the butter and then a little bit of sugar. Take the egg yolks. Mix those into the lukewarm chocolate base. So now what you have is that bowl of melted chocolate, and you've whisked all the egg yolks in. The reason why you don't want the chocolate too hot when you're putting the egg yolks in is because it'll kind of curdle, and you'll make scrambled eggs, and you don't want that. Okay, so now, using an electric mixer, take the egg whites and the cream of tartar, put it in a large bowl, and mix it with the electric mixer until soft peaks form. Now, what this means is this. These things that looks like snot, egg whites are gross looking. They're mutiny, it's like mucus. And you whip it and whip it and whip it and whip it, and you don't think anything's happening. Before you know it, it starts to turn a little bit white and a little bit whiter and whiter and whiter. And before you know it, you've got whipped egg whites. And what it is meringue. The stuff you'd see on top of a meringue pie, a lemon meringue pie, same thing. So once you're able to take those beaters out of the egg yolks, and it kind of like makes this little, you know, castle and a big peak, and it kind of like, you know, attaches itself to the beaters, then you're done. Fold the whites into the chocolate in 3 additions. Add a little bit, stir it up into the chocolate base, and then add a little more and stir it up until it's completely fluid. Divide the souffle mixture among your prepared ramekins, place it on a baking sheet, and stick it in the oven that you've already preheated. You bake the souffles until they're puffed, but usually around 15-20 minutes. They need to be puffed a little bit, maybe about an inch over the actual ramekin, but still kind of moist in the center. Take them out. Let them cool for about 2 minutes. Sift a little bit of powdered sugar over the souffles. Serve them immediately. Mwah. I am telling you guys, it is fantastic. It tastes great. You're going to impress everybody at the table, especially your wife. And it's going to go very, very well with any really good rich stout beer, especially the Stone Bitter Chocolate Oatmeal Stout that we're having on the show today. It is incredible. And what a great pairing this is. I recently made these for some family members that came over for dinner. I'm telling you, they were floored. They really, really, really liked them. Make it a staple dessert. Anytime you need to make dessert, this is a good one. So with that out of the way, I read recently that Connecticut Attorney General Richard Blumenthal did not think that minors should be playing WiiWare's soon-to-be-released beer pong. Even if the beer was kind of virtual, he didn't think it was a good idea. It's inspired by that stupid sport, the beer pong sport. Got a T rating for teens, and it had alcohol references all the way through it. And Blumenthal was a bit pissed off, and I kind of agree. You know, presumably now they took the beer out and they put water in it, and they were going to call it Pong Toss, but it's kind of silly. You know, you're gearing these video games toward kids, and you know, I'm a proponent for being able to drink booze. But I'm not a proponent for having 12-year-old kids playing beer pong. I think beer pong's stupid to begin with. You shouldn't be playing it anyway. I mean, at a party or something, you want to have fun, that's fine. But it's beer abuse, if you ask me. Drinking games, I've always played them. When we were in college, we played them. It's fun. But don't put it to kids. And if you're going to make Wii games, make them for adults and put an adult tag on it and say adults should play this. But not teens. It's not a teen game if you're playing, you know, a frat party drinking game. I just, I know I don't want to sound like a prude or anything, but I just thought it was kind of dumb that they didn't put an adults-only explicit tag on this. And that's all Blumenthal asked them to do. And now they're kind of arguing with him. They put an E for everybody. So the guy's just doing his job. It sounds like it needs a mature rating. Put a mature rating on it, and then you can sell it. All right? Enough.
Me no reiki.
Excuse me?
Me no reiki.
I caught an interesting report on CNN where they were investigating the impact of the food crisis in Peru and a potential solution in the potato, of all things. And I thought this was kind of cool. Potatoes have about 100 calories apiece. They have no fat in them, almost all carbs, which you can certainly use for energy when you're walking your way around Peru. I mean, have you ever seen Peru? The elevation of Peru is so crazy that people who visit there have to like be on oxygen tanks. And potatoes is really kind of strange. That potato is actually linked to obesity because that whole, you know, the carb phase that people are going, the no-carb diets, potatoes is the first thing to go. Because people generally do is they'll eat a potato and then they'll sit on the couch. That's why the term couch potato. And then they'll get fat because all that sugar turns to fat. But this is a great story. Listen to this.
It's 2 a.m. in Lima, Peru. Soldiers cloaked by darkness. They strategize, unload gear. A covert military operation with a surprising objective.
What you're witnessing here is the Peruvian government's answer to the food crisis. It's literally a fly-by-night operation. This is done in the middle of the night to avoid chaos, to avoid rioting. They've actually enlisted the help of the army, who've secretly put together these bags of food and now are going to knock on doors one by one and distribute them.
But door-to-door handouts simply aren't enough in this mountainous country. In some region, over 40% of children under age 5 are malnourished.
When you're trying to get a sense of the food crisis problem, Vilma is a good example. First of all, she takes about 500 calories a day. That's way less than the 1,500 she should get at a minimum. She comes from some of the most remote areas of Peru, and get this, she's pregnant. So she's trying to carry a baby, 500 calories a day, and take care of her 4 children at home with very little food as well.
Whoops! Pregnant and already has 4 kids? Well, maybe it's not a good idea to be getting pregnant when you can't afford to feed yourself, you think? Oh, man. Sorry. You got 4 kids already. It's not like you haven't already started a family or anything. I mean, I don't want to get political or too preachy here, but come on now. Let's be rational.
Food prices have gone up all over the world, really. Are there solutions literally right underneath our feet?
We think potato is an overlooked opportunity.
In fact, Peru has more than 5,000 different types, all different shapes, colors, names.
Now, potatoes get a bad rap in many parts of the world. In fact, they've been linked to the obesity epidemic. But a medium-sized potato, like this one over here, it's about 100 calories, great source of vitamin C, fibers, and minerals, and it doesn't have any cholesterol or fat.
They need to start looking at potatoes, sweet potatoes, as opportunities for securing their food.
Today, scientists are working to help farmers increase output and market the Peruvian spuds locally and abroad. 8,000 years after they were first cultivated, it may be a new beginning for the Peruvian potato.
Anyway, good story, right? I love that. Now that we've done that, let's drink some more beer.
That is awesome.
Oh, I have letters. I have fan mail. I get these from time to time. I get some emails. I get emails, but they're usually they're just nice emails that I get from people, and I say, you know, I love the show. I listen all the time. I'm a foodie. I think people are just afraid to tell you that they're a foodie. Like it's something to be ashamed of, or that you know, we should be closet foodies. No, man, be celebrated, I think, because it's great that we love to cook. We're passionate about food, and I'll tell you, if you're going to be passionate about anything, be passionate about food. But sometimes I get emails that are just kind of funny or bring up really interesting questions. Like this one here is from Jeff McDaniels from Byram, New Jersey. He writes, hey, Phil, enjoy the show. You know that saying the camera adds 10 pounds to anyone on television? Well, I want to know how many cameras they're putting on Paula Deen. Have you seen her lately? Jesus, she's huge. That's a good question. I haven't seen her lately. Know about that. This one is from Denny Bernard from Maryville, Missouri. Writes, I read an article recently about how women apparently find chocolate more of a sexual stimulation than they do men. And if that's true, why haven't they got chocolate in their bedside drawers instead of you know what? Another good question and topical. So thank you, Denny, for that. I'm not sure why that is. One last one I have here is from Chris Pether from Portland, Oregon, writes, not sure if you've tried any snacks in these new Stay Fresh packages, but they do not work as advertised. I bought a bag of Cheetos last week, and the bag ensures that with the new Stay Fresh Zip Pack, your Cheetos will last 7 days. That's bullshit. Mine were all gone in 2. Well, Chris, Maybe you should write him a letter. You know, for close to a year now, we've been discussing food shortages. And of all the things that I thought we'd end up discussing, one thing I thought we'd never see a real shortage of were insects. Now, I read an article in The Independent, which is an online news source from London, that France is now facing a snail shortage. You know, isn't that weird? The Frenchies are reporting that they no longer obtain a sufficient amount of snails from Eastern Europe. And of all the things you thought that you'd always see on menus, escargot, last thing to go. As it turns out, part of the problem is that snail collecting is not a real popular job in Eastern Europe now. Poland and Hungary actually supply 2/3 of all the snails that are eaten in France. There are better job opportunities now than there are for like snail collectors. And the hot and dry summers of recent years have now been unfavorable for the French snail farming industry. So French markets are relying on more processed snails, and they see that bounty prices are going to be higher for snail hunters. And I have kind of a sick story to share with you that goes with this, but it does go to show that you can pretty much eat anything if you really want to. When I was a kid, and I mean little, I was like 7, 8 years old, my mom was treated to an escargot at some dinner that she attended. Now, my mom, she was a person, she really liked to put on airs. I mean, the woman loved to make like things were better than they were. And God bless her, because more often than not, things were pretty bad. So she tells me about these snails. She comes home that night. She tells me about this meal. She had these snails, how delicious they were. They melted some butter with garlic, and you picked these things out of their shells, and you dipped them in the butter, and you ate them, and they were delicious. And I was beside myself. I thought, you know, at first I thought, I want to throw up. But then I respected my mom, and I respected her opinion. And she made it sound so great, I wanted to try them. So what's my mom do? She goes outside every morning for about a week, collects garden snails out of our backyard in a mayonnaise jar that she's filled halfway with Quaker oats. So we've got these snails on the counter in a mayonnaise jar, and they're eating the oats. And the oats, the reason they do that is they eat the oats, acts as a cleanser. So they eat the oats, and it cleans all the dirt and all the, what if, you know, sometimes these snails will eat like, you know, insecticides and stuff that won't kill them, but it'll kill us. So this cleans them out. So they're clean, completely cleaned out. So after a week, she takes them out of the jar. She puts them in the oven and compacts a little bit of butter and garlic inside the shell and bakes them. After she's done baking them, she takes them out of the oven, puts them on a plate, a little bit of melted butter and garlic in a jar, and we picked them out of the shells and ate them. And you want something? They were delicious. And I know the garden variety of snails aren't really the best ones in the world to eat, but with enough garlic butter, they're not that bad. And mind you, I was 7. Now, I've had farm-raised snails since, and they were a lot better than that. But as a 7-year-old kid, I can't tell you how cool it was to have a mom who would go out there and collect snails and then cook them for you. I will always remember that. I can see it in my mind as I'm telling you the story. I can kind of picture it. But to make matters even worse for France, I read another story this week that baby oysters are now mysteriously dying by the millions along the French coast from Normandy to the Mediterranean. And now they're saying it's the worst crisis to hit the French oyster industry in like 30 years. Now, I know a lot of you aren't going to really be too upset about this news, as there are snails and oysters not high on your list of tasty things to eat. But there are two things I really do enjoy, so it's sad news for me to hear. But what they think is actually causing this are warmer sea temperatures, which generate more plankton, and baby oysters are dying because they're eating too much of it. And I think this has to do something with their metabolism, because people are questioning, you know, how can this be? You know, it's not killing the adolescent or the adult oysters, but it's killing the babies. And I just think that the baby oysters cannot handle it because their metabolism's set up, and they're not set up to fight any diseases. So if they're eating this stuff and there's too much of it and it's poisoning their systems, then yeah, they're going to die. And it's just a guess, but it's a common problem in a lot of man-made lakes and ponds. There's a small lake not far from here where I live. They had the same problem a few years ago. Algae overgrew from the high temperatures, and it ended up eating all the oxygen in the lake, and it left none for the fish. So the fish started dying, floating to the top of the water and reeking like a son of a bitch. I mean, there are houses surrounding this lake. So depending on which direction the wind was blowing, you get a nice whiff of dead fish every 20 seconds or so. They drained the lake, dredged it, reinstalled pumps, keeps the water flowing, and then algae can grow is kind of a lot slower than it was before because there's recirculated water. And it doesn't seem like a logical fix for the ocean. You know, I know a lot of the oyster farms have their own man-made salt water beds. They grow the oysters in those, so they can control things like algae easier. I don't know, you know, what the future holds for the oysters in France, but Frenchie, you better shuck them while you got them, buddy. You know, you'd be in some serious trouble. It's good to live here, though. There is a place down in Oceanside. Actually, not Oceanside, Carlsbad. Carlsbad Aqua Farm, where Stone World Bistro and Gardens, actually, when they have their food parties, they buy local ingredients. And one of the places they buy oysters from is from the Aqua Farm in Carlsbad. And I've been meaning to go down there, but, you know, I've been a bit busy. Hey, while I'm on the subject of San Diego County, my friend Mark owns 4 acres of avocado grove in San Diego County. The best avocados I have ever tasted, period. And I'm not just saying that because he lays buckets of freebies on me in the spring stuff. They really are. They're the best damn avocados I've ever had. Even those that I find at the farmer's market do not compare to the creamy, rich fruit that he's growing at Aguacate Ranch. So I find myself looking for inventive ways to eat, you know, these things. Because, you know, you could do rice and bean burritos with avocado, guacamole, crab and avocado salad, BLTs with avocado, all the normal stuff. You start looking for new recipes and stuff. So I read this article last week in the New York Times. It blows me away. Of course, it comes out now that we don't have avocados, but, you know, we keep this for next year or whatever, whenever they're harvesting. The Motif at Macanado is a restaurant and bar opened in early July on Houston Street in the Lower East Side of Manhattan. It's Estilo Libre Latino, which means freestyle Latino for all you gringos. Freestyle? What the hell does that mean anyway? I'll tell you what it means. It means they're not afraid to screw around with ingredients. That's what it means. Listen to this. They make a frozen avocado drink. It's spiked with mezcal, Contro, and a cocoa leaf liqueur. Aguacate y mezcal. It's a pistachio-colored smoothie that gets a nice kick from the mezcal, the booze that's in it. And if you don't know what mezcal is, it's kind of like tequila, but it's not really tequila. But it is tequila. You know those old westerns where the guys are drinking tequila and they used to get the worm in the bottle and they'd eat the worm? Yeah, that's not tequila. That's mezcal. Mezcal has the worm in it. And mezcal basically refers to all agave-based distilled liquors that aren't tequila. And all tequila is a variation of mezcal that's made principally from blue agave in the town of Tequila and the surrounding region of Jalisco, Mexico. But the flavor is kind of close. It's not the same thing, but it's very, very close. And if you're going to be mixing this thing, I think if you use tequila in its place, it's fine. You're just splitting hairs. And there's a couple substitutions you can do here. Here's the recipe, though. 1/4 avocado, 1/2 ounce of Contro, 3/4 ounce of agua coco leaf liqueur, which is a melon liqueur that they said you could use Midori in its place, 1.5 ounces of mezcal or tequila, and then 1.5 ounces of freshly squeezed lime juice, 1 ounce of agave nectar. That might be hard to find for some of you. I know we can get it here. 1 teaspoon of honey, and then some kosher salt and a lime slice. And what you do is you spread kosher salt on a small plate, and then you rub the rim of the glass with the lime, and then you dip it in the salt. So that's how the salt sticks to the glass. Combine all the ingredients, the avocado, the Contro, the Midori, the mezcal, tequila, the lime juice, and the agave nectar and the honey. Put all of that in a big, and a scoop of ice, put it in a blender, and then mix it until it's smooth, and make a big, giant green smoothie. Pour it into the glass, and serve it. And that's it. And I'm a big, huge fan of smoothies. I like fruit smoothies in the summer, but this isn't a sweet, this is kind of a savory thing. And almost kind of gross. Like, people would think, oh, an avocado smoothie would be kind of weird. But man, could you imagine that? I haven't tried it, but I'm telling you, I'm going to feature it sometime in the future. An avocado smoothie with booze. You can't go wrong with that. Anyway, it was kind of an odd show. That's pretty much it. That's what we're doing. And that's what we have. So this has been My Life as a Foodie. Music in this episode by Crystal Method. Download it in the iTunes store. See our website, zeroface.wordpress.com. Got a link to that song. Download the recipe for the soufflés. Make them. You'll be very happy. Get yourself some of Stone's 12th Anniversary Bitter Chocolate Oatmeal Stout while supplies last. God only knows how long this stuff lasts. Sometimes it lasts forever. Next thing you know, it's off the shelves. Anyway, thanks again, everybody. My name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie, and I'll see you next time. Ciao.
Mino Reiki.
Excuse me?
Mino Reiki.